The fact is that he pored over the writings of Greek astronomers who preceded Ptolemy, such as Hipparchus and Aristarchus of Samos. The latter, Aristarchus, suggested in the 3rd century B.C. that the motions of the heavenly bodies could better be explained if the sun and not the earth were assumed to be in the center. In fact, 2,000 years before Copernicus, Greek astronomers listed the planets in their correct order from the sun, acknowledging thereby that the sun, not the earth, was the solar system's focal point. The heliocentric, sun-centered concept was only rediscovered by Copernicus. And the interesting fact is that astronomers knew more in 500 B.C. than in 500 A.D. and 1500 A.D. So much for the traditions. Indeed, scholars are now hard put to explain why first the later Greeks and then the Romans assumed that Earth was flat, rising above a layer of murky waters below, which there lay Hades or hell, when some of the evidence left by Greek astronomers from earlier times indicates that they knew otherwise. Hipparchus, who lived in Asia Minor in the 2nd century B.C., discussed, quote, the displacement of the solstitial and equinoctial sign, the phenomenon now called precession of the equinoxes. But that phenomenon can be explained only in terms of a spherical astronomy, whereby Earth is surrounded by the other celestial bodies as a sphere within a spherical universe. Did Hipparchus then know that Earth was a globe? And did he make his calculations in terms of a spherical astronomy? Equally important is yet another question. Now, what am I seeking to demonstrate? That the traditional idea that man started out pretty limited in intelligence and progressively got smarter to the present day is simply wrong. The Bible indicates there were some smart ones. To whom God revealed things that knew more than the present discoverers in science. No. Did Hipparchus then know that Earth was a globe, and did he make his calculation in terms of a spherical astronomy? Equally important is yet another question. The phenomenon of the precession could be observed by relating the arrival of spring to the sun's position as seen from Earth in a given zodiacal constellation. But the shift from one zodiacal house should go in the precession of equinoxes. From one zodiacal house to another requires 2,160 years, or 2,000 approximately, I'd say. Hipparchus certainly could not have lived long enough to make that 2,160-year astronomical observation. Where, then, did he obtain his information? He was obviously smarter in his knowledge of the heavens than Ptolemy. And the concept that prevailed from Ptolemy through the 1500s, the 16th century. And as we're going to see, he got it from more ancient sources than himself. Too hot now, Mike. Where did he obtain his information? Am I boring you?
No, sir.
Eudoxus of Cnidus, another Greek mathematician, an astronomer who lived in Asia Minor 2 centuries before Hipparchus, designed a celestial sphere, a copy of which was set up in Rome as a statue of Atlas supporting the world. The designs on the sphere represent the zodiacal constellations. But if Eudoxus, living 2 centuries before Hipparchus, that takes us back to 700 BC, conceived the heavens as a sphere, where in relation to the heavens was Earth? Did he think that the celestial globe rested on a flat Earth? A rather awkward arrangement. Or did he know of a spherical Earth enveloped by a celestial sphere? Come over here. This is a figure that shows the design of Atlas holding the sphere, which had a zodiac around it. Where was Earth? Inside the sphere? Encased by a spherical heavens? Or did he envision a flat Earth with this sphere sitting on it like a soccer ball? The works of Eudoxus, lost in their originals, have come down to us thanks to the poems of Herodotus, who in the 3rd century B.C. translated the facts put forth by the astronomer into poetic language. In this poem, which was familiar to St. Paul because he quoted it, of course, fundamentalists don't want to have to recognize how widely read and informed the Apostle Paul was. Neither did the early church, who wanted to rest the church on the ignorant foundation of James. And John, the one-syllable man, in the beginning, as an exception, was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among, there's a second two-syllable word, us. Paul quoted from it, and in this poem, the constellations are described in great detail, quote, drawn all around, and their groupings and naming is ascribed to a very remote prior age. Quote, some men of yore a nomenclature thought of and devised, and appropriate forms found, end quote. Who were these, quote, men of yore, to whom Eudoxus attributed the designation of the constellations? Based on certain clues in the poem, you don't care? We're going to try to trace back to the source of all this smartness, which is a smartness that could build the pyramid, and which Josephus says placed a similar time capsule intended to survive fire, a brick monument in Mesopotamia. So if Josephus is right that the descendants of Seth, with the prophecy of Adam, built these 2 time capsules to preserve knowledge through a holocaust, one of stone that's in Egypt to his day, and one of brick that was no longer in Mesopotamia, then those descendants of Seth, those builders of the pyramid, were in both places. Which one was built first? The one in Mesopotamia that no longer was around in Josephus' day? Or the one in Egypt that was still around in Josephus' day and is still around in our day? Who were the, quote, men of yore to whom Eudoxus attributed the designation of the constellations? Based on certain clues in the poem, Modern astronomers believe that the Greek verses describe the heavens as they were observed in Mesopotamia, around 2200 B.C. Now that puts us back another 1500 years. The fact that both Hipparchus and Eudoxus lived in Asia Minor raises the probability that they drew their knowledge from Hittite sources. We didn't even know the Hittite kingdom existed until recently the digs uncovered that amazing Hittite kingdom. Hints of the existence of which were almost as hard to detect as the gravitational pull that enabled the detection of Pluto in the heavens. And they still have not completely diagnosed the finds of the great Hittite kingdom as a crescendo of archaeological finds, Dead Sea Scrolls, Ebla, El Armana correspondence that we were leading up to last night and didn't get to, that Velikovsky has analyzed in relation to the story of the Exodus. The Hammadi finds of the Gnostic scripture. It is believed that Hipparchus and Eudoxus drew their knowledge from Hittite sources. Perhaps they even visited the Hittite capital and viewed the divine procession carved on the rocks there. For among the marching gods uncovered in the Hittite finds, two bullmen hold up a globe, a sight that might well have inspired Eudoxus to sculpt Atlas and the celestial sphere. Give me a picture. See the two men holding up the globe? Were the earlier Greek astronomers living in Asia Minor better informed than their successors because they could draw on Mesopotamian sources? Hipparchus, in fact, confirmed in his writings that his studies were based on knowledge accumulated and verified over many millennia, many thousands of years. He named his mentors, quote, Babylonian astronomers of Erech, Borsippa, and Babylon. Geminus of Rhodes named the Chaldeans, ancient Babylonians, or Babylonians, as the discoverers of the exact motions of the moon. The historian Diodorus Siculus, writing in the 1st century B.C., confirmed the exactness of Mesopotamian astronomy. He stated, quote, the Chaldeans named the planets. In the center of their system was the sun, the greatest light, of which the planets were offspring, reflecting the sun's position and shine, end quote. The acknowledged source of Greek astronomical knowledge, then, specifically named by Hipparchus, was Chaldea. Invariably, these earlier Chaldeans possessed greater and more accurate knowledge than the people that followed them. For generations throughout the ancient world, the name Chaldean was synonymous with stargazers, astronomers. I remember Paul in Romans 1. Says that man is without excuse because the judgment of God against ungodliness, he says, past tense, was revealed in the heavens. But man without excuse began to worship the creation instead of the Creator and reduced that wonderful message down to animal nature and begin to worship the creation instead of the Creator. By the time the Chaldeans took the knowledge that was ancient even to them, and accurate in its astronomical detail. They had already begun to worship the animal signs they used to portray the zodiac. They worshiped the bull instead of the creator of that which Taurus the bull, or that by which Taurus was symbolized, the bull. The knowledge then, astronomically, is traced to Chaldea in Mesopotamia, but it predated them. It's gone. Abraham, who came out of Ur of the Chaldeans, was told by God, "Oh, you don't care about any of this." I know. Most people listen to me, they get convinced there's a prophetic message in the pyramid, and they aren't interested in anything except, when's the Lord going to come? Don't trouble me with all the details in between. But you that are interested in me pursuing this line of teaching, which once again will demonstrate the accuracy of God's word and the control of God on history, and the role of the Creator at the beginning and his priestly line, you get on telephone. You talk while the music plays. I'll teach when the music stops. I'm reading from the Trilogy of Books, Earth Chronicles. This is Book 1, The 12th Planet. You that have been listening to me teach, you'll remember it was from the second of the series, Stairway to Heaven, that the evidence was offered of Colonel Weiss' forgery in the pyramid of the cartouche of Khufu, or Cheops. And the third is the wars of gods and men. He has some pretty far-out theories, and I don't embrace all of his theories, but his research is pretty impeccable. And I'm reading a section from the 12th Planet on the superior knowledge of astronomy in the ancient world. Compiling and analyzing hundreds of texts from the first millennium B.C., R.C. Thompson, in the book entitled The Reports, or his product, The Reports of the Magicians and Astrologers of Nineveh and Babylon, which couldn't have happened until archaeology burst like an avalanche on the modern world with all of its finds, the Rosetta Stone, and the breaking of hieroglyphics, Linear A and Linear B, out of the product of the work of Evans on Crete, the translations of the Behustin Stone by Professor Rawlinson, and the cracking of many of those ancient, both hieroglyphic and Syriatic writings, have enabled a vast amount of information to be accumulated. R.C. Thompson, analyzing hundreds of texts from the first millennium B.C., was able to show that these stargazers were concerned with the fortunes of the land, its people, and its ruler, from a national point of view and not with individual fortunes derived from the study of the stars. They tended to drift from astronomy into astrology, and that has continued to the present day. But even this astrology required comprehensive and accurate astronomical knowledge, without which no astrological omens were possible to derive. The Mesopotamians, possessing such knowledge, distinguish between the fixed stars and the planets that wandered about. And they knew that the sun and the moon were neither fixed stars nor ordinary planets. They were familiar with comets, meteors, and other celestial phenomena, and could calculate the relationship between the movements of the sun, moon, and earth, and predict eclipses. They followed the motions of the celestial bodies and related them to Earth's orbit and rotation through the heliacal system, with the sun in the center, not the Earth. And this system, still in use today, measures the rising and setting of stars and planets in Earth's skies relative to the sun. To keep track of the movements of the celestial bodies and their positions in the heavens relative to Earth and to one another, the Babylonians and Assyrians kept accurate tables that listed and predicted the future positions of celestial bodies. Professor George Sarton, in Chaldean Astronomy of the Last Three Centuries B.C., found that they were computed by two methods, these tables predicting future positions of celestial bodies. A later one used in Babylon, an older one, and that's what we're trying to do, push back, and they get smarter, not dumber. An older one from Uruk. This is the gestalt of everything that I'm teaching tonight. His unexpected finding was that the older Uruk method was more sophisticated and more accurate than the later system. As though man deteriorated and moved away from a superior source of knowledge. That's what we've been pushing. 3rd century B.C., the Greeks more accurate than the period from Ptolemy in the 2nd century A.D. to 1500. Then from Copernicus onward, who researched ancient astronomers, the knowledge has progressed to the current space probes. But as you go back in time, 300 B.C., they had a better, more accurate view than 2 A.D. You go back to Mesopotamia, 2200 B.C., more accurate than 300 B.C. And now, Uruk, older than Babylon, more sophisticated and more accurate than the later Babylonian system. Professor George Sarton accounted for this surprising situation by concluding that the erroneous astronomical notions of the Greeks and Romans resulted from a shift to a philosophy that explained the world in geometric terms, while the astronomer priests of Chaldea followed the prescribed formulas and traditions of Sumer. Now we're way back to the Sumerians, maybe the most ancient of cultures yet unearthed. The unearthing of the Mesopotamian civilizations in the past 100 years leaves no doubt that in the field of astronomy, as in so many others, the roots of our knowledge lie deep in Mesopotamia, particularly in the heritage of Sumer. Now, I don't mean Sumer, 4th of July. I mean the Sumerians. Sarton's conclusions have been reinforced by very comprehensive studies by Professor O. Neugebauer in his Astronomical Cuneiform Texts. Professor Neugebauer was astonished to find that the ephemerides, the tablets, or tables that predicted the future positions of celestial bodies, precise as they were not based on observations by the Babylonian astronomers who prepared them. Instead, they were calculated, quote, from some fixed arithmetical schemes which were given and were not to be interfered with by the astronomers who used them, a knowledge passed on, arithmetical. Such automatic adherence to, quote, arithmetical schemes, end quote, was achieved with the aid of, quote, procedural texts that accompanied the ephemerides, which gave the rules for computing them step by step according to some strict mathematical theory. Neugebauer concluded that the Babylonian astronomers were ignorant of the theories on which the tables predicting future positions of the celestial bodies and their mathematical calculations were based. They had a plan for predicting it passed on to them. He also admitted that both the empirical and theoretical foundation of these accurate tables, to a large extent, escapes modern scholars as well. Yet he is convinced that ancient astronomical theories... Go up and direct and get Joe down here, see if he can straighten his sound out. Yet he is convinced that ancient astronomical theories, quote, must have existed prior to the Mesopotamians, because it is impossible to devise computational schemes of high complication without a very elaborate plan, all of which reduces down to they had a mathematical formula for devising these schemes, just like you can learn to use a slide rule without understanding all the theories behind it. You might not be able to build a slide rule, but you can learn how to use one. They had the plan, not to be deviated from, to work out the predictions. But they got it from an earlier source. Professor Alfred Jeremias concluded in his handbook in German that the Mesopotamian astronomers were acquainted with the phenomenon of retrograde. But what's retrograde? The apparent erratic and snake-like course of the planets as seen from the Earth, caused by the fact that the Earth orbits the Sun either faster or slower than the other planets. Thus, the other planets are seen, due to this, in an apparent erratic course. The significance of such knowledge lies not only in the fact that retrograde is a phenomenon related to orbits around the Sun, but also the significance is in the fact that very long periods of observation were required to grasp and track the retrograde path. Where were these complicated theories developed? And who made the observations without which they could not have been developed? Neugebauer pointed out that, quote, in the procedure texts, we meet a great number of technical terms of wholly unknown reading, if not unknown meaning. Someone much earlier than the Babylonians possessed astronomical and mathematical knowledge far superior to that of later culture in Babylon, Assyria, Egypt, Greece, and Rome. Somebody that had a knowledge that enabled them to build the pyramid. Who?
Who?
The Babylonians and Assyrians devoted a substantial part of their astronomical efforts to keeping an accurate calendar, like the Jewish calendar. To this very day, it was a solar lunar calendar correlating or intercalating the solar year of just over 365 days with a lunar month of just under 30 days.
For more of the teaching, please go to the next tape. Thank you.